regular agenda. Item 212.
Accept a grant in the amount of $113,000 from appropriate $84,750 for fiscal year 2013-14 and authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation, Transportation Safety Division for the 2014 Motor Carrier Safety Assistant Program for motor carrier safety inspections by the Police Bureau Traffic Sworn Personnel.
Morning.
Good morning. I am Captain Kelly Shepherd of the Traffic Division, and to present this grant will be Sergeant Volpel.
Morning.
Honorable Mr. Mayor, Council Members.
Switch that mic on that's right next to you, just the button at the bottom. There you go. That's good.
The City of Portland, Portland Police Bureau Traffic Division applied for a grant for with the Oregon Department of Transportation, and it's a motor carrier enforcement grant. This is the third year we've actually applied for it, and this year, I'm happy to say that we've actually increased the amount of the grant over last year, and especially in the overtime area. Part of the grant requires us to work 20% of the time in off hours, and we use those overtime hours to work when officers aren't assigned. They work in like on weekends and stuff when trucks traveling through and in and about the city of Portland aren't expecting a police officer to stop them and do an inspection on the truck, safety inspection on the truck and the actual driver. So it's, if I can explain the grant to you if you like.
Well, I think what would be helpful, particularly because I'd like to hear it as well, maybe other council members, tell us what a typical inspection is like in terms of what you're looking at and what the dangers are that these inspections are trying to avoid.
The motor carrier inspections are, there's three different levels. The first one would be level one, and it would be an all-inclusive inspection of the truck, the brakes, the all of the systems, the connectors, everything. And it's a much more in-depth inspection. We have two level one inspectors with the City of Portland Traffic Division, and it's very extensive. They're typically half hour to an hour long at least. A lot of them are done off-road, off the roadside, because they get creepers and they weigh the vehicle. And we're currently working on finding some funding for a vehicle for the level one inspectors to carry the scales and all the equipment they need with their level one inspections. We're working in partnership with ODOT on that. And then the level two inspections would be a little bit less intrusive as far as they're checking the driver for the amount of hours they've driven on the roadway, their health certificate, making sure they're up to date and current with that. They're also checking for intoxicants. A lot of drivers use stimulants to drive, or they're driving intoxicated. The level of intoxication for truck drivers is a lower level. It's a 0.04 BAC level for presumptive DUI. They inspect for that. They also check the trucks for safety equipment, for the brake bleed downs, the tire level, the depth of the tire tread, whether there's a flat tire or not. Nationally, the truck out of service or the vehicle out of service is 20% of vehicles are out of service, and the driver out of service is about 6%. We're currently.
So you mean, Sergeant, that 20% of the vehicles you inspect are taken out of service?
Yes.
As a result of that inspection.
Wow. Okay, pretty high number.
We're currently at driver out of service at 16.4%, and overall vehicle out of service is 34%, 34.7.
Wow.
We've got some excellent inspectors who, they look closely and they dig down. There's a number of tools we use for that. We use the crossing systems as far as finding out how many hours, if somebody's trying to cheat on their hours. And it basically comes down to where a driver wants to cheat on the hours so that they can get to a location and make more money because they get the turnaround time and they can get back. So the more they're driving, the more they're transporting goods. But it also increases the danger level tenfold because they're driving not impaired by intoxicants, but they're driving impaired by sleep deprivation. And they make poor decisions, causing crashes and fatalities, which we ultimately go and investigate. The level three inspections are the less intrusive inspections, typically on smaller vehicles, buses, that kind of thing. And part of our grant, we do level three inspections, but we focus on level two inspections mainly. We have 14, actually the two level one inspectors also do level two inspections. So a total of 16 inspectors are in the Bureau now. We have, part of the grant also allows us to send officers to the school where they pay back the funding for the officers at the school. So if it's 40-hour class.
Curious, at any of those level of inspections, are you checking for emissions?
The level ones might check for emissions if they're in, like, down in Woodburn or something. I don't know everything about the level one inspections. I'm not a level one inspector. But they may do that down in Woodburn.
You know, we all have the experience of getting on 405 or the Banfield or something and being behind a truck that looks like it hasn't been to had a tune-up in a while, and it's belching black smoke, and that can't be good for anybody. And I've often wondered how we monitor that and what recourse we have when someone's flagrantly out of compliance with our DEQ standards.
The vehicles are still they still have to comply with DEQ, and they have to comply with if visible emissions. So if you have visible emissions that are excessive, that you can still stop them, and it's a violation.
You can do that?
Oh, really? Yes. It's like any other vehicle that's smoking and oiling out there. We can stop them if they're excessively smoking.
Didn't know that.
Good, because it happens actually with some frequency.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that was actually that we had the authority to do that with trucks.
So. And typically to stop the vehicle, to stop any vehicle, we need probable cause for a stop. So if they commit a violation, speeding or not using their turn signals or driving in the wrong lane, we'll make the stop on the vehicle. Then we'll initiate the inspection after that. But that's one of the requirements that we have to follow. There's a number of things that we'll have to.
You don't have probable cause just off of belching black smoke?
If it's something like that, well, that's a violation. If it's an ORS violation, we can stop the vehicle and then conduct an inspection.
Good.
So I'm curious, what does it actually mean when a vehicle gets taken out of service? Is what does that vehicle have to do to get back into service? Do they have to show anything?
It depends on the type of out of service. For instance, a flat tire. If any of the vehicle tires are flat, the 18 wheels, any of those are flat, then they put the vehicle out of service. They have to drive directly to a service center and have the vehicle or the wheel replaced or fixed prior to driving the truck any further.
Does somebody follow them to that center to make sure they do that? Or
we don't always. We don't have the staffing or the personnel to do that, to actually follow them to a lot of these centers, but we do put the placards on the vehicles so that if somebody else sees the placards, to remove it would be illegal. To drive beyond that point would be illegal, and it's actually a crime to do so, to drive out of service.
So you put placards
on put placards on the vehicles. They also, like for a driver, if they're over hours, they'll put the driver down for, you know, 10 hours to 24 hours so that they are out of service, and then they become compliant with their number of hours in a day or a week that they've driven.
But those drivers, are they required to simply leave the truck and have someone else come pick it up, or do you let them drive for a limited time after the violation?
Those will typically find a place for them to pull off the roadway, and okay. We will follow them off the roadway to make sure that they're legally parked and not blocking the freeway.
Okay. Other questions? Great. Anything else that you hadn't included already, sir?
Just that we also have some funding in here for TAC missions, so we do address other vehicles intermingling with the commercial vehicles. A lot of times cars don't give trucks kind of space to move in, or they'll cut them off. So we do there is a portion of this where we'll address other vehicles interacting with the commercial motor vehicles. And ODOT we've negotiated with ODOT to actually have missions, they call them TACT missions, to actually address the aggressive drivers out there as well.
Right. So. Yeah, playing chicken with an 80,000-pound truck is risky to a lot of people.
Could I just clarify one other thing, because this came up in my commute to work today. Under what circumstances can a commercial truck double park, blocking a lane downtown?
I believe downtown Portland has the and I can double check, but I think that they have the ability to double park if they're loading and unloading freight. I think it's an ordinance that allows them to do that.
And is it restricted as to time? Is there a carve out, say, for rush hour?
I don't believe so.
I would appreciate a follow-up on that.
You can find out. That's a good question.
It's usually during rush hour that it becomes very disruptive for people, and it creates hazards for pedestrians, bikers, and drivers. I'd just be interested in.
Yeah, okay. That's a good question. We'll find out. Good.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Good reporting. Any other questions? Thank you both. Is there anyone signed up to testify on this?
I did not have a sign-up sheet for this.
Okay. Then let's see. That is an emergency ordinance. Roll call, please.
Fritz.
Thank you for your work and for this interesting report. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Yeah, thanks for your good work. Aye.
Hales.
Anyway, traffic safety issues are a big deal in our city, and obviously this report shows there are lots of facets to that. It's not just people driving impaired, people driving texting, people walking across the street in dark clothing in the middle of the night and getting hit and killed. You know, we have tragedies and problems out there in terms of traffic safety, but this work really is an attempt to get upstream from that and to prevent some of those disasters from happening. So thanks for good work. Glad we got the grant. Aye. Okay, next item, 213.
Amend the Bureau of Development Services fiscal year 2013-14 adopted budget to add appropriation for 18.0 new positions and associated materials and services to support the restoration of development review services.
Mr. Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. This is a cause for celebration for several reasons. First of all, as everyone I think knows, we suffered significant losses in the Bureau of Development Services over the course of the recession, reducing the staff from 315 to 147 employees. And so this adding back positions is evidence that construction trade is picking up and that we have the fees to support these positions. So for both of those reasons, that's a good thing. It's also, I think, a cause of celebration because it's establishing a precedent that for the Bureau of Development Services, having positions approved in the regular budget cycle doesn't work. It doesn't jive. It doesn't sync with the construction season. We're actually even a little bit late here in March getting authorization for these positions because it takes from 3 to 6 months to do the hiring process and train people to be doing the jobs in development services. So it's my hope that from now on, development services will be coming to council early in the year, maybe in February, to ask for the positions to be authorized that we believe are necessary for providing a good customer service to the construction industry and to the citizens of Portland. And so Director Paul Scarlett and Deborah Siebert-Morris are going to go through the proposal. Yes. I just want to emphasize that these are all fee-supported positions and that there are state regulations about what we can and cannot use fees for. So that obviously we're proposing to use them for the reason that the developers pay for them. We're not proposing any fee increases this year, or none at all?
Except for one.
Just one fee increase this year. And in fact, we decreased some of the fees in previous years. So it's really a good thing, and I'm very pleased that we're able to bring forward this ordinance.
Great. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. Paul Scarlett, Bureau of Development Services Director. I'm joined with Deborah Siebert-Morris, our new Senior Business Operations Manager. You've previously been presented information by former person in the position, Denise Klein. Right. And Deborah's been with us since November and just excited to have her on board. Like Commissioner Fritz says, this is a reason for celebration. We are here with positions to try and maintain operations, to keep up with the construction industry and the growth that we've seen in both workload and revenues. I do want to express my support, my thanks to Commissioner Fritz for her support in us bringing this ordinance forward at this time, as well as Andrew Scott and Christy Owens, our financial analysts in the budget office, who is allowing for sort of a change, if you will. We feel like we're getting unprecedented sort of get in line first, if you will, because we still ran these positions through the regular budget planning process, but realized the need to add positions sooner than later, in part because the Bureau of Development Services prided itself on delivering the best service possible and to keep up with construction timelines, to keep up with service levels, and not to have the gap worsen. It is timely and reasonable and actually makes a lot of sense to come forward at this time. So we appreciate the opportunity to do so. 18 positions spread across the board, from planning positions to inspections positions to tech positions and support positions all around, to address service levels throughout the Bureau and to connect with our customers and our employees, to assist our employees as well. The positions in some ways is focused on not making services worsen. We certainly could add, probably would need to add more positions, but we're also proceeding cautiously and reasonable. And so 18 position had the analysis and the review and support of our budget advisory committee, our development review advisory committee, as well as our labor management committee. So all of these positions have gone through the budget planning process to look at the justification tied to workload, tied to service level goals, and tied to just the need for professional assistance and growth. So as I don't have additional handouts, the ordinance that we've supplied you with includes, I believe, all the information included in my memo, and Deborah will go through some of the more details of some of the positions and so forth. But I do want to emphasize that we pride ourselves in promoting safety in construction activities throughout the city of Portland to assist in its livability and economic vitality. These positions are geared to accomplish those goals that not only the Bureau of Development Services hold in high regards, but as well as our customers and the community. Increases throughout different areas with permit center, seeing increases in walk-in customers. Inspection numbers have gone up. The permit issuances have gone up. And so these positions really are geared to maintain operations. One focus area that's part of this ordinance is to improve increase the service of the Development Services Center, also known as a permit center. Currently, it's still closed on Mondays and limited services on Fridays. That move was essentially needed when the recession hit us pretty hard. And so we went from 5 days to 4 days and only able to issue permits in the mornings. It is time now with the workload and the revenues that we're experiencing and the demand from our customers and community to increase our service, and the service in this case our hours of operations, to not be open on Mondays. It is timely to do so, and so we're a number of these positions, about eight, is geared towards accomplishing that goal as well. I could go on and on, but I think maybe just by context, when I first was appointed in this position in 2005, we're experiencing the same challenge, and that is we couldn't hire fast enough. 4 or 5 years later, we had the opposite challenge where we're forced to lay off people. One of the most unfortunate acts and tasks I had to do, we had to, of course, be responsible and do what we needed to do to manage our operations. 4 years later now, we're in that cycle again and trying to keep up with the construction and trying to hire staff, which is a really nice, positive thing to be doing. It is a challenge. It's demanding, but one I'm really excited about. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Deborah to explain a little bit more about specific positions.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Deborah Sievert Morris, the Bureau of Development Services Senior Business Operations Manager. As you're aware, BDS is a fee-supported bureau. 95% of our fees, or our operating budget, comes from the fees that we collect for services. We're proposing amending this current fiscal year's budget to add 18 fee-supported positions in order to be able to address increases that we're experiencing in our service levels. 15 of the 18 positions will be providing direct frontline services. They're represented positions. The remaining three are positions that will be supporting some internal support for training of our staff and workforce development and succession planning. The approval of this package actually will allow us to expand services in a variety of areas in the Bureau, including our residential inspection program, our enforcement program, land use services, residential and commercial plan review, and also includes parts of increases in expenses related to interagency costs associated with adding these additional positions. So additional rent costs for the 1900 building, computer services, and vehicles for the inspectors that we're adding. The overall cost of the position is essentially $800,000. That's for the remainder of this fiscal year. And we're looking at, on an annual basis, approximately $2.4 million. So that's what this will add to our overall budget. As Director Scarlett mentioned, this is something that we did work through our budget process. It's supported by our Budget Advisory Committee, as well as the Development Review Advisory Committee. And they supported coming forward earlier and actually amending our budget this year in order to be able to accelerate restoration of some of the services that we had to cut or reduce during the recession. We also have our Financial Budget Advisory Committee has reviewed our financial projections for the next 5 years, and we do have projections that will support these additional positions over the next 5 years. Our Financial Advisory Committee is made up of a number of local economists and industry experts, and they've been very valuable in working through kind of our methodology and taking a look at our financial forecast and providing us with feedback on that. Overall, the positions will be doing a variety of service adds. As Director Scarlett mentioned, we will be restoring service in the Development Services Center to 5 days a week. This is something that our stakeholders have really wanted to see happen. It's also going to allow us to increase both our commercial and residential inspection goals. We currently try to have our inspections completed within a 24-hour time frame. We'll be able to move our residential inspections from meeting that goal about 88% of the time up to 95%, and with our commercial program from 90 to approximately 96%. So that's also a very positive thing. And that pretty much kind of sums up our package.
Great. Just really appreciate the fact that by making this move, you are going to be restoring, and something I know Commissioner Pritz has been very interested in, restoring that full day operation. Because I think for customers, you know, that's been a real, you know, a difficulty.
It has indeed. Our goal is for the end of April. Obviously, we'll be working with Commissioner Fish with the utilities and with Commissioner Novick for transportation to make sure that their staff are also ready to go when we've hired the staff and got them trained.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Other questions for the team?
A couple. Paul, where are we currently on reserves, and does this action impact reserves in any way?
Reserves, I'm almost shy to say, but we've exceeded our reserve goals due to the type of projects we've been experiencing. So our reserve goal is 30% of our operating budget, which would be about $12 million. We're at approximately $27 million. So it's really high, partly because the highest expense in our bureau are personnel, about 70%. And with the larger projects, because our permit fees are based on valuations, we have experienced, due to the equation, high revenues. So that builds our reserves back up and beyond the reserve goal, which we have a huge ticket item out there, the ITAP, Technology Improvement Project, which is about $10 to $11 million will be subtracted from that reserve goal. We'll be paying for it with our revenues.
And to Commissioner Fritz, you know, every time we do something slightly out of sequence, we are setting a precedent. And so I wholeheartedly support your application today, and I think it is almost unique to fee-based bureaus where the work is episodic and we can track it. But could you just, again, succinctly state what you believe is the precedent that is established by this action?
I would like Development Services every year to be coming forward, because as Director Scarlett indicated, this is actually a fairly conservative ask. Having been through the tragedy of laying off half the staff, we certainly don't want to get ahead of our skis on this.
Right.
So I'm anticipating that there may be other asks over the course of the year as we see if construction continues to take off. The important thing, though, is to recognize that the construction season is during the drier months, and so that we're getting more of the applications in, and we need to be able to have the staff hired and trained before July 1st, which is when the regular cycle would set them. It's also important to note that this doesn't include the general fund ask for Bureau of Development Services, so that will go through the regular budget process.
All right. The other question I just had is, yes. I remember when we saw the general the reserves come down to almost nothing during
Correct.
The teeth of the recession. I also remember all the layoffs and the hardship that caused, obviously, mm-hmm. on wonderful employees. But my recollection is there was also a lot of bumping that occurred. And so people bumped into planning and sustainability and elsewhere. So as a consequence of now staffing up, are we seeing the reverse? Are we anticipating the reverse will happen, which is planners that bump down into other bureaus now seeking to come back to BDS and then causing vacancies in other bureaus?
That's a good question. Some of that is a timing issue. And recall lists are only good for 2+ years, I might be off on that. So the majority of the recall positions have been, the lists have been exhausted at the time it expired. So what we will see, for example, planning positions, if planners in BPS or transportation, wherever in the city, are looking at those positions as they're posted and wish to compete for them, they certainly can do that, but it wouldn't be sort of automatic seniority bumping situations. That's been sort of now passed for the most part.
How many of the new positions are in land use services?
I believe 5. Is that correct?
Yeah. Let me double check real quick for you.
So the majority of them are inspectors.
Six, according to this
six.
List.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. More technical.
Six.
Thank you.
Paul, just one last question. We had a briefing a couple months ago from a couple of economists and someone else about trends in our community. Mm-hmm. We saw that we've really recovered on the permit side. We're back to sort of the glory days.
Yes.
And is that holding steady? And what's your current sense on that?
It is holding steady, and we connect with the finance committee made up of local economists to provide us indicators and affirmation as to the projection. And as part of an operating bureau, we're required to submit a 5-year financial plan. So the 5-year financial plan anticipates steady gradual growth over the next 5 years. And so things are holding. One of the dynamics we've experienced are the different types of projects in 2009 and 2010 or 2010. They were smaller projects. It kept us busy, but the project size and valuation was so much smaller. And now with the Fox Store, if you will, other projects in and around those areas in South Waterfront, these are $200 million projects that generates high revenues for us. And so we're seeing the revenue and the increase in projects have gone up, but the revenues have really gone up. So we're seeing steady growth, and things are anticipated to be holding over the next 5+ years.
So Commissioner Fritz is not only happy that her reserves are built up and she's able to rehire, but you'll be having additional SDC revenues to fund out, to fund new parks in East Portland.
Yes, that's correct. Parks, yes. That makes sense. You know, I could say, along with your question, Commissioner Fish, about the sort of timing of ask, one thing that makes this particular ask maybe a little different is, I believe this year we didn't have a winter bump, so we're capitalizing on the bumps as well, the budget alteration processes. And we did ask for position spring bump and winter bump, so it wasn't available, I believe, so we're doing it now. And so we'll make adjustments or present proposals for adjustments as is deemed necessary in and around the bump processes as well.
Thank you very much.
Sure. You're welcome.
Questions? Thank you both.
Welcome.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this?
Yes, we have one person, Mr. Lightning.
Thanks very much. Come on up.
My company is Think Lightning. One of the concerns I always have is the using projections. When we project out 5 years into the future, as we know, a lot of these very knowledgeable economists also missed the recession, too, on their projections. And we always have to look at history and understand that. They can project out, but we really don't know. And what I'm seeing in the marketplace myself is that I feel in the next 6 months to a year, there's going to be kind of a cooling off leveling period. And what you're seeing through a lot of other states throughout is that you're seeing some high-end developers literally beginning to sell off a lot of their land holdings. So why they do that is they don't want to start building. They want to actually take that capital out of the land and put it into other reserves because they feel the market could possibly begin to be cooling off. And what I was hoping on this situation is that you're actually bringing back quite a lot of people. The cost is considerably high, and I would like to see it almost at 50% due to the fact I think the market will begin to cool off in the next 6 months to a year. And these five-year projections, they're just what they are. They're projected out 5 years. And we really have to have a good understanding that we've had a tremendous amount of building. We've caught up with the current economy. We know we're right there. We're beginning to level off. Actually, home prices in homes aren't selling as fast as they used to. And we need to monitor that from the market position that by doing this now, in 6 months to a year, we very well may be back to the point of laying a considerable amount of these people off. I say go 50% on this, see what the market does, and understand there's developers out there selling off their land holdings to pull that money out of the land because they know they don't want to hold it, pay the property tax, and they're putting that into other areas. And that's something to watch real close here. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? And
that's all
roll call on the emergency ordinance.
Fritz? Well, thank you to Paul Scarlett and Deborah Sievert Morris for that good presentation and for your leadership of the Bureau. Deborah, it's wonderful to have you on board. And thanks to Andrew Scott and his team in the City Budget Office who have puzzled through this with us and are supporting this. Thanks, Commissioner Saltzman, who really took the Bureau from the point of having almost no reserves to having at least $20 million, I think, when you passed it off to Mayor Hales and helped get the Bureau back on a more stable track. And I thank Dora Perry and Tom Bazot in my office who have been amazing in helping to figure out this Bureau that was new to us back in June of last year. Most of all, I thank the staff in the Bureau of Development Services who have been through the wars and who for a long time were having layoff after layoff, and then the people who were left were having to multitask and do all kinds of work, and because there was still some work coming in, and it's been extremely stressful. I appreciate that we're being very careful about rehiring, and in response to Lightning's comment, this actually is a conservative estimate, and we may be coming back with some more requests. We're also being very careful about who we hire and the hiring process being open and equitable and encouraging talent from all over the country is wanting to come to Portland to be part of the Bureau of Development Services, which is extremely exciting, as is the fact that when our employees from the City of Portland have competed for those jobs several times, it's been one of our existing employees who has beaten out the competition. So I do thank the staff in every section of development services. It's been quite a challenge, and I'm glad that we're back on track. And as Commissioner Fish mentioned, I'm very happy to see the construction trade picking up, not only because that's good construction jobs, and it means that we're providing new office buildings, new housing, also because that's providing system development charges, which is crucial to being able to build out our system and have development pay its way. Aye.
Fish?
A happy day, Commissioner Fritz, and I met with Willie Myers the other day, and he told me that in contrast to 3 years ago where there was 30% unemployment in some of the trades, he said they're at 100% employment in some of the trades. In fact, there's a scarcity of the trades, which is another indicator of this incredible growth we're going through. So, Paul, thank you to your team for the presentation. I believe that what we're doing in responding to the market needs when you have the need and outside of our normal budget cycle is reasonable and appropriate for a fee-based bureau. So I thank Commissioner Fritz for bringing this forward, and I'm pleased to support it. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I also want to thank Commissioner Fritz and Paul Scarlett and the entire staff of the Bureau of Development Services for doing a great job. And this is indeed good news to hear both that reserves are at a healthy level. Mindful of need, you need to pay for your new technology system, ITAP, out of those reserves, but also that you're putting people back to work and that there's and providing increased customer convenience by opening on the permits that are on Monday. Those are all good news, so thank you. Aye.
Hales.
Well, naturally, having been burned by a big real estate downturn and the tragedy of having to lay all those people off, we're a little shy about adding workforce, but this is a prudent move. And of course, we've got professional economists who advise the Bureau and advise the Budget Office and advise us about where things are headed. I can only add a little bit of anecdotal evidence to that, but that evidence also, I think, supports this decision. And that is, yes, our local property owners, builders, and developers are coming to the permit counter, you know, at a faster and faster pace with large projects and getting them permitted. We actually have to have a responsibility to hire people to inspect those buildings because most of them are still drawings at this point. So there's a lot of work to do downstream as people start to install all the systems in those buildings that don't even exist yet. But secondly, the anecdotal evidence I'm seeing, both from talking to prospective employers who are considering moving here and from looking at indices like the story this week that Portland, New York, and San Francisco have the lowest office vacancy rates in the country, seem to indicate to me that this isn't bubble growth. And in fact, when you look at projects like American Asset Trust doing their four-block project in the Lloyd Center and other national developers coming to Portland with concepts that are, frankly, our local developers haven't thought of, I think we're going to see some additional resiliency in this trend. Again, it's not just housing units for people that have moved here or office space to meet demand, but some new concepts like a timeshare hotel that's being planned. So I think there are going to be some interesting projects as well as just more business for this Bureau to do. So this is the right move. And again, I think the council discussion was good. The key issues here are this is customer service permit fee supported, not general fund, and therefore a different animal than some bureau randomly coming to the council for an amendment in the budget over the course of the year. This one makes sense for all those reasons. Thank you. Aye. Okay, we have one more regular item, and then we'll go back to the consent item.
214, assess property for sidewalk repair for the Bureau of Maintenance.
Roll call, second and reading.
Britz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, and we have item number 206 that was pulled.
Appoint Kate Lohr to the Human Rights Commission for a term to expire October 31, 2016.
I don't believe Ms. Lohr is here. I'm not sure who pulled this, but
Mr. Walsh pulled it.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individual for Justice, and I come bearing good news. We love this candidate. We have been involved from somewhat of a distance, but she walks with the angels as far as we're concerned. She will bring style, dignity, and a great deal of knowledge to this committee, the Human Rights Committee. It's very important to us to have a very strong Human Rights Commission. We have some problems that you're all well aware of, and we are trying to work them out. The federal government is trying to work them out. You are, we are, unions are. Reverend Kate Lohr will be a tremendous asset in that battle when she takes a seat on the Human Rights Commission, and whoever nominated her should be proud, and the rest of you who vote today to confirm her should be really proud. And when you walk out of this room, you will see me smiling. Thank you.
A rare occurrence indeed. My name is Malcolm Chaddick, and thanks for the opportunity to address you on this matter. As a member of Veterans for Peace, National Coordinator for Nuclear Abolition, and other various groups and organizations with an eye towards human rights, Kate Lohr is an excellent candidate. I doubt you could do better. And it is a current need, as evidenced by the recent treatment of Mr. Mubarak at the hands of our police, apparently denied the use of his legal name change when he became a Muslim, was insulted in a heinous fashion by the officers who were attempting to get him to sign paperwork under a name that was not his, and was apparently possibly mistreated because of his stance. A person like Kate Lohr is the kind of person to help fix these things, and I will certainly help her. Thank you for your time.
Great, thank you. Okay, roll call on that item, please.
Ritz?
Well, thank you, Mr. Walsh, for pulling this item, because it gave me great joy when I read it on the agenda over the weekend, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to join my thanks to Reverend Kate Lohr of the First Unitarian Church for being willing to serve and for you to, for supporting her nomination. Just as a point of information, the Human Rights Commission selects its own members, which are then forwarded to the mayor and council for confirmation. So it's evidence that that body is also doing good work in recruiting good members and being an important voice for human rights and independence in the city of Portland. When it was first established and when we were working with the Office of Human Relations, there was some concern about whether the Human Rights Commission could be truly independent while being staffed by city employees. I was going to say evil public servants or some other such pejorative term that was implied that government workers couldn't necessarily staff an independent commission. And in fact, the Office of Equity and Human Rights is doing a great job of providing the support while still allowing for the Human Rights Commission to speak out as its members choose. So while I was running for council a couple of years ago, Reverend Lohr gave me the honor of calling me her beloved commissioner. And so I'm very happy that she will now be one of our beloved commissioners. Aye.
Bish?
George Hocker and I were at a faith and labor breakfast the other day, and she was the facilitator at our table. And she did a wonderful job. And she's a former lamplighter of the year for her homeless advocacy work and a completely engaged activist in our community. And I think she brings great qualities, as Joan mentioned. So I'm delighted to support this application. Aye.
Saltzman?
Yes, I'd add to the accolades for Reverend Lohr. She's a great person and will be a great addition to the Human Rights Commission. Aye.
Hales.
I first met Reverend Lohr when she took a young activist named Cameron Witten under her wing, and she is a person of principle and passion, and she's going to add a great deal to this commission, so I really appreciate her service. Aye. And we're recessed until 2 p.m.
Amanda, can we use any portion of the...